going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
And here we go, Digital Adele back with another Hoops Profile Beyond the Backboard podcast for you with my co-host Matt Hennepin. Real quick, I just wanted to let you guys know I've got too many titles going. I got Beyond the Backboard, I got College to the Pros, I got Hoops Profile. We got to eliminate some of these. So I think going forward, I'm just going to introduce it as Hoops Profile. And whatever we talk about, we talk about. Like, I think that's about it. Just way too many titles. It messes up also the search algorithm for people to find the content. So we're eliminating a lot of titles. We're just going to go back to Hoops Profile. That's all we're going to do. But anyway, how are you doing today, Matt? How are things?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. How about yourself? It's conference tournament week.
Yes.
Conference tournament week, March Madness. Selection Sunday is this upcoming week, March Madness, which I will be at for at least a few days. It's coming up next week.
Outstanding.
Yeah, man, it's the best time of year for college hoops, man. Best time.
I love it, man. Love to hear it. Absolutely. We got conference tournament time, like you said. The brackets will come out on Sunday. Me and Brian Fonseca are putting together something for that day. So there's going to be content to come out surrounding the 2025 NBA draft and the pairings and matchups. Basically like a guide of what to watch. So we're going to be doing that. Matt's live on site for a while. I mean, there's exciting times around not only college basketball, not only NBA prospects, but one Matt Hennepin and his journey through the tournament.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's still random. I'll be in Seattle for 3 days, 4 days.
Yeah.
Visiting family because I have family that lives up there as well. So I don't know if I'll be able to see any prospects because we don't know whose teams, which team, where the team
is playing. We don't know yet. That's right.
I might see, I don't know. I could see anyone.
I can't wait. That's going to have something for me to keep an eye on for whenever me and Brian do that show. I'm going to try to shout you out. Be like, oh, Matt Hennepin's going to be able to watch him live.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pumped for it. I'm pumped for conference tournaments. The Mountain West tournament begins Wednesday.
Outstanding.
So tomorrow. This is the best time of year, man. The best time
Absolutely.
Of year. So I'm doing very well to answer your question in a very long-winded fashion.
That's all right, man. You're a long-winded type of dude. So let's jump right into what we've come to talk about today. We're going to talk about the top 10 shooting guards you should know from the 2025 NBA draft. Now, if you've followed our content all year, we've covered pretty much every single prospect that you can imagine outside of some of the international guys. If I haven't covered them in depth on the channel, that means I haven't had an opportunity to watch them. Now, let me preface, some of these international kids play like 10 minutes a game. Like Hugo Gonzalez never plays. I've tried to watch him play 8 or 9 times, never saw him play. So it's one of those things where, you know, we've got almost everybody. First round, I've seen almost everybody that's projected to go in the second round for the most part. And, Yeah, the international guys, some of them like Rocco Jarski is a mystery to me. Michael Ruzic. I'm not even going to pronounce Markovic's first name. Not even going to try.
I did watch Seraph. I told you I would do it.
Oh, you finally watched him.
I did watch Seraph. I was only able to watch a couple of games because how they're not very available on YouTube.
Right.
But I was able to watch one of his games from December. And I also watched one of his Euro Cup games.
Okay.
He was with Israel. I like the player. There were some tendencies where I'm like, okay, you're going to have to, going to have to be fixed, but he was good. He was good. The stuff that I loved about him, at least again, very, very initial watch.
Right.
I think like he knew how to settle down the team's offense when he was on the floor. Like that was something that I liked. Like he would settle it down. The person that he reminded me of just very instantaneously, not because he's a lefty or they're both lefties. He kind of reminds me of Goran.
Oh yeah. He's got a little Gogi in his game.
Yeah. He reminds me a little bit of Goran.
Gogi was the better shooter early.
Yeah. I thought he saw the floor well. But the stuff that I liked about him was his engagement defensively.
Like that absolutely.
That was something that I liked about him a lot, especially like off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
There was some stuff where like he doesn't have he doesn't have an incredibly explosive first step, but it's good enough.
It's good enough. Yeah, it's good enough.
I don't know. His finishing's a little bit weird to me.
Right.
Because there were times where he shied away from contact, and it was just like...
He does that. Yeah, he does that.
So it's like, okay, like maybe that's something to work on, but like he has an NBA-ready body. He saw the floor well. Like there was a few times where he made some really nice skip passes, really nice reads. But no, I for an 18-year-old, like who he could fill it up, he can get to the rim. Like when he was finishing through contact was something that I like, okay, there's some mixed reps here, but like it wasn't bad per se for someone who's 6'5", 6'6". The shot was, at least in the games that I saw, okay, but not great. The shot selection was more so a concern, but like he's 18.
And not only that, like his balance, he's never on balance when he shoots ever. So
there were a few times where he had like some contested twos where I'm just like, I don't love this.
Right.
Where he's off balance, but like, again, I like the player, but it's only a 2-game sample from what I watched. So it's not like,
but all of it matches up to what I've watched.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, you're not far off. I mean, the other thing about him is that because he's 18, you don't all the time realize you're bigger than other people or how strong you are, you know? So that's where some of that finishing through contact will get better as time goes on. But I'm glad you got to watch him because I really like him a lot, man. I think
for
really
someone who's 18 years old, I think this kid's going to be like a legit dude at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
He absolutely shows. I don't know if he's a point guard or a combo guard. Like that's something I'm still trying to figure out.
Right.
But like, I think he can. He's more advanced than some of the point guards that we've watched in this class already. For someone who's 18 and playing professional basketball already.
And that positional size is something that you can't teach. And the fact that he's that fast with that positional size, that he gets to wherever he wants to go. I love it. I love the prospect. And in the wide open NBA, pace and space, be able to get up and down the floor. Like imagine if he goes to some place like Indiana or something like that, where he can just run up and down the floor.
Like he's very savvy. Like,
yes.
There was a few different times. This was mostly in the Euro Cup game that I watched. Mm-hmm. There were times where he wasn't able to create advantage with his right, and so he would always spin back to his left.
Right.
And like that's a tendency where it's like it kind of reminds me of like someone like Jaime Jaquez, for example, who just like if he's not able to create an advantage with either one of his hands, he'll spin back to the other. And he's a left-handed dominant player. He can still go to his right and use his right. And so again, those are just those like just minor things.
Right. Things 18-year-olds can overcome. Like they can learn from.
Right. But like he's very for someone who's 18 with the ball in his hands, he's savvy.
Yes.
Like there's some savvy where it's just like, oh, like he's able to create advantage with a few of these moves, a few of these crossovers, especially
get you on his hip.
Players. Like,
yep. Like he'll get you on his hip and he'll ride you down a lane too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like the player. I'll say that for again, that's a very initial evaluation, but I like the player.
Absolutely.
But you did tell me to do my homework, and I did do my homework. So,
which I appreciate. I do appreciate that. He's because he's an interesting prospect, and I thought you'd want to get some reps on him because when it comes time to come to the draft, he's going to go higher than people think, and you're going to be able to give him an answer to why.
I would take him over Fears. Like, I would take him over some of these guys.
Now you get it.
That's not a knock against those other guys. No. Let me just make that clear. That's not a knock, but I just, again, for someone who's been playing professional basketball already, and for someone who I think I read somewhere that he was the MVP of the under 18 Euro Cup.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And one of the things too, when he's on the big club, they start coming back every time he comes in the game. Cause he came off the bench for a while. He'd come off the bench, come in the game, they start winning. He goes, sits down, they start losing. There's tangible evidence of him affecting winning on that team.
Especially again, there's some stuff defensively where I'm like, this kid is going to, like, if he goes in the right system, in the right place, like, these guys are going to love him.
Like Miami?
Yeah. If Miami drafted him, Spo would fall in love with this guy.
For sure. And he's got some stuff to him, right? Like he'll talk some trash.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He has that I guess for lack of better phrase, like competitive demeanor about it.
Yes.
Like he's got it feels like to me like he's got some FU to his game.
Absolutely. Well, we came here today, though, to talk about shooting guards, not point guards.
Yeah.
You had a question for me to open today's show. What was that question?
Well, yeah, it was just you. I know you mentioned in our Discord that you watched Donovan Dent, or at least I don't know how much of the game you were actually able to watch against
the whole thing. I rewatched it.
OK. Yeah. Just initial thoughts. Like what, since I gave my first reaction on Ben Seraph, what was your first reaction on Donovan Dent, who's, by the way, a worse player?
Yeah, he's not nearly as good. Right. He's not nearly as good as Ben Seraph in terms of being a prospect. If Ben Seraph was in college and played in that conference, he would just dismantle everybody.
3 years.
Yeah. So, but Donovan Dent is a very interesting player. I mean, obviously the first thing that stands out, he's incredibly small. Terrific ball handler. He's actually really fast. His finishing around the rim is kind of incredible for his size. Like the touch he has around the rim is unbelievable. The same thing with the body control. It makes for a great college player.
Yeah.
He's going to be a UDFA. Somebody might take a flyer on him the very, very end of the second round because of how decorated he is. But you got to be an elite facilitator at that size. I mean, he's not that. He's a good facilitator, but he's not an elite facilitator. He doesn't shoot the three ball. So at that size, it's going to be very difficult. In Europe, I mean, he can make a pretty good living overseas. He can make a pretty good living. I mean, the G League doesn't pay much, but he could be in the G League for a very long time. He's just an incredible college player. I just don't think he's an NBA guy. That's my initial thoughts. Just incredible touch around the basket. Like, it's just unbelievable.
I agree. Again, I love him to death. There's a reason why I had him 9 and not higher.
Right. Right. For sure.
Among point guards.
And now that you've seen Ben Seraph, he's probably been pushed down even further. Because Ben's probably climbed your
board. Oh, yeah. I had Nolan on my list.
Yeah. I mean, Nolan Troy is good too. Like his ability to facilitate is pretty special, but we'll get into him when we talk about point guards some more. But let's get this thing kicked off. Everybody's here. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Come visit us on Playback as well. We're going to get into the top 10 shooting guards you should know right now. And the number one guy, no question about it, the number one guy out of all the shooting guards. Because we're not classifying Kasper Šljakačonis as a shooting guard, right?
No.
All right. We're not categorizing Seraph or Denman as shooting guards, right?
Nope. I don't have either of them on my list.
All right, cool. we'll categorize Jace Richardson as a shooting guard, obviously Con Knipple.
I don't have Jace. Considering I had Jace on my point guard list,
I think he can be both. I really do, because
me too. But
because he's more of a shooting guard than a point guard.
For the sake of conversation,
yeah,
I did not
keep him off.
Yeah, I mean you can have him if you want. I don't care. But like,
all right, I'll take him. So
I put him on my point guard list, so I didn't think about
that's all right. I make these up. I do the research and all that, but I do my list in real time.
Inventing new prospects to put on your list.
That's right. I invent people. VJ Edgecombe from Baylor is my number one shooting guard. Just outstanding, unique athlete that you rarely get to see. And if he's legitimately 6'5", I have concerns about that. I don't know if he's legitimately 6'5". I'm very interested in his measurables, but that ability to just explode from as a vertical athlete, a one-footed athlete, stop-start perspective, just unbelievable athlete. And then the stuff he's been able to do with his shooting is, you know, just solidified it for me. His ball handling's gotten better. Decision-making's gotten better. Stud defensively. Over 2 steals per game. I really like everything VJ Edgecombe. What about yourself?
You hit the nail on the head, and I'm looking at it now. 39.1% on 5 attempts from 3 in conference play.
Yeah.
There was a lot. Again, we belabored it on here early in the season where we were like, the defense is good, but he's, you know, incredibly athletic and agile, but like the offense, the on-ball reps aren't good. The shot's not falling. And then all of a sudden conference play comes. I know Baylor suffered a couple injuries in their backcourt, and he just kind of took off and hasn't looked back since.
And that's what you want to look for, because I've seen so many incredible athletes in college basketball just fizzle out, you know what I mean, and not have an NBA career. A lot of that is due to there was no growth.
Yeah,
they were just athletes the whole time in college. And so I was really interested to see what kind of growth the kid would have. And that's what really done it, you know, sold it for me, is the fact that his game has grown, and you can kind of show that that's going to continue to happen, because he's only going to be 19 years old when the draft rolls around. Excited
and
about that guy.
The on-ball reps still aren't great, but like, I think just everything, his offensive profile in general is much better than it was early in the season. And I think that's
absolutely
and a lot of it has to do with, you know, the shot falling and him becoming more comfortable, you know, in that area. Something that I think goes not under talked about, just outside of all the athleticism and whatnot, he's a very good rebounder for someone his size.
Yeah. He is.
I am with you. I think he'll probably clock in at like 6'2.5", 6'3" without shoes.
I think so too. That's actually a very good observation out of you.
And so like that, I mean, I think he'll be, you know, I give or take 1.5 to 2 inches with shoes, but, I think he's around his listed measurements as of right now. But to your point, I'm very interested to see what his wingspan is.
Yes.
I think that's the thing that I'm most interested about.
Wingspan and hand size.
Deplete his draft stock or anything if he comes in with short arms, but
T-Rex arms.
Yeah, like but that's something, because it doesn't look like he has incredibly long arms. Like it looks like it's not like not like Drake Powell or someone who had like Drake Powell could stand up and his arms would probably could probably touch the ground.
Speaking of Drake Powell, his defense has gotten even better. The last game I saw, he was an absolute menace on a defensive end. But number two, who do you have number two, Matt? Because this is actually where, in my mind, looking at the list of players, it started getting difficult for me already at the number two spot.
Trey Johnson.
That's a great one. That's a great one. Wax poetic about Trey.
I honestly, this top three, it's a 1A, 1B, 1C for me.
Okay.
Because I think they're all very good prospects in their own way. And I also had BJ one. to me, his edge is more so like what he can do defensively and his ceiling with that,
right?
Considering how athletic and instinctive and agile and his, you know, crazy body control, like,
right,
all of that I think gives him the edge over Trey. But Trey's just like, you and I are probably Trey's biggest fans, or two of his biggest fans.
Absolutely.
Just because of like how good of a shot maker he is. We think there's more playmaking upside. We think there's more defensive upside. I know he doesn't like completely fill it up in the rebounding area, but
right,
that from him all that much. It sucks that Texas is currently a first four out team. We're on their outside looking in heading into the tournament.
Yeah.
Because he'd be someone that'd be really fun. At worst, I hope they don't have the ego to discount NIT games, because I know some programs that don't make the tournament have done that over the last few years.
Yeah, you're right about that.
I hope Texas plays in the NIT, and I hope we're still able to see Trey, because he's played at such an exceptionally high level against SEC play this year, where it's like you just can't ignore it at this point. And like, I know I've had my concerns about him getting to the free throw line and him, you know, generating rim pressure, but like,
right,
when he's able to get his feet under him and when he's open, like, he's so incredibly efficient. And he could, you know, he is their offense. Like,
even when he's not open, he creates a lot of space with those step backs, and he's always on balance when he does it. I found it really unfortunate that he doesn't really have any help. I know Pope can have some big games at times, but because he doesn't have very much help, when he played Oklahoma, they literally blitzed him as soon as he got over half court. There was
that
guys.
Oklahoma game wasn't great for his numbers.
No, he was like 0 for 14 or something like that.
Yeah.
But he was 7 for 7 from the foul line, had 7 rebounds, 6 assists. You know, he had a couple of steals. So he still affected the game in other ways, and they had a chance to win. Right. It's just that because he doesn't have help and you can send two guys at him as soon as he's over half court, he's going to have some trouble, you know? And that's kind of where I'm at with them. It's kind of how I feel about Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. However, since there's two of them on the team, it gives me a little more pause. But Trey, I just find the lack of help and what he's been able to do, the work ethic, the leadership, I think all of those things are why I'm with you at number two. But here's what was really difficult for me. I love Con Knipple's game. Love Con Knipple's game. The only thing that holds me back from Con Knipple is him being able to create off the bounce. He doesn't have it. I mean, he has it a little bit, but he really doesn't have it. That Duke offense, he really just attacks the close.
Yeah.
You know, coming off PNRs and attacking close. That's what he does. So the lack of a being able to get his own shot is what worries me. But I think there's some of that ability in there because he does do it a little bit. He just needs to improve that foot speed. He has to really make that a priority. It's one of the knocks I have on Liam McNeely, who's not as good as Con Knipple, but
yeah,
it's one of the things that I hold him back. That's why he's a high level connector piece. But for me, number three clearly has to be Con Knipple. I know I love Jace. I love Jace Richardson. But Knipple's shooting 91% from the free throw line, 40% from three, 47% from the field, while dishing out 2.5 assists and grabbing 4 rebounds per game at 6'7", but I think he's going to come in at 6'5". Maybe he's legit 6'7", who knows? But he's also a brick wall on defense, so his defense is terrific as well. So yeah. Con Knipple is my number three. I just think the world of that kid's game. What are you? Who do you have third?
No, it's Con. I don't think there's any... Considering I don't have Jace on my list, I don't...
Oh, that's right. He's not even in your list.
Well,
that's...
even though I wouldn't consider Jace anyway for three, like, right, I think there's a big enough gap to where it's just like... There's really no question in my mind.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of like he does a little bit of everything for you.
And it doesn't just do a little bit of everything. Like, his percentages are like, I don't think people, and not saying you, I don't think people realize how rare it is for someone to have those kind of percentages on the on those types of minutes that he plays. Like,
yeah.
And also, again, I'll reference this. That Duke team basically says Con Knipple's the one guy, the one guy on the team. Like, if you had to pick a guy that you didn't want to get into a fight with, it's Con Knipple. Everybody on the team says that.
I don't know, man. I wouldn't want to get into a fight with Malawach, maybe, over just because, like, his reach. Like,
I didn't say it. I'm telling you what all his teammates said. That's what his teammates said, according to the broadcast.
I still would pick Malawach. You would
Malawach, Sion James.
His reach is insane. I couldn't do it.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying you would fight either one of them.
No, I wouldn't. No. No.
But yeah, no, I just, for somebody that plays 30 minutes per game to shoot those amount, you know, those percentages, I just find that to be a special, special trait. And his assist to turnover ratio is a 2.
Yeah.
Like, he's just such a great winning player. But who do you have number 4, Matt?
Cam Jones.
Cam Jones from Marquette, Golden Eagles.
There's a big enough gap to where I have like he's would clearly be in my second tier among these, you know, among the shooting guards. His efficiency has taken a dip this year. I think part of it is how much responsibility he's at offensively, but like,
yep,
he's still down to 65% shooting from the free throw line, which is a little bit concerning. He's shooting 26% from 3 in conference play, which is also a little bit concerning. So
have you seen the shots he takes in conference play?
Yeah, that's where it's just, I don't always love it, but I love watching. Like, he's one of my favorite. I said this before, and I actually said this on Saturday.
Right.
He's one of my favorite mid to late first round prospects, because I think if you put him in a system where he doesn't have to do as much as he's doing right now, like, he's an exceptional complementary piece.
Yes.
I think he's a very good, like, for someone who we're labeling as a combo guard, he's someone who's, I think, a good passer.
Yeah.
He's a good rebounder. He's a good, not great finisher. And I mean, I want to see him finish a little bit more with his right and use that. But for someone who I think this year is a little bit of an outlier in terms of his shooting, just all around. I think he'll be like a very good complementary guard.
And that's why he would go late round, because he's not a guy that you could envision as being your leading man.
Correct.
He'd be a complementary piece.
Correct.
This is why I have Jace Richardson above him. I have Jace Richardson, who would be...
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.
The player for me. I know you don't have him on your list at all, but Jace just does so much for you at the age of 18 on draft night. 6'3", 185. I think there's more facilitating chops there than people give him credit for. So I personally would go Jace. Cam, I'm struggling with. Over Ian Jackson.
I thought about him, but I have someone else above Ian. So,
do you? That's interesting. That's very interesting. I hope it's not Neat Clifford.
Well, if I'm just going to say it's Neat Clifford.
Oh, it is Neat Clifford.
Yep. I thought about putting Ian above him, but I have Neat at 5.
So let me explain my piece on Ian, and then you can explain your piece on Neat Clifford. So Ian Jackson, as a freshman, he's going to be a little bit older as a freshman, though. He's like 20 years old, but he's 6'4", 180 pounds. That Carolina team early in the season looked dead in the water. Like, they looked completely dead in the water. And he was their only bright spot. Well, they look better since the AC. Yeah, since the end of the season, they've looked a lot better. He's averaging 13 points per game, 41% from three, and 48% from the field. Like, those are some serious numbers. And he's getting to the free throw line about three times a game. Not great percentage from the free throw line, only 73%. And he can rebound, and his defense has gotten a lot better. He's become a lot better defender as the season went on as well. He's got, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. He's got 8 20-point games on the year. I mean, his scoring output, his ability to shoot the basketball, I think that's going to be coveted, you know, to NBA teams. And the fact that he's still that young and he's going to be able to be that good of a defender. So I have, that's why I have Ian Jackson above Cam Jones. The draft age, the shooting percentage, and the field goal percentage as well.
Fair.
What are your thoughts on Neek Clifford?
I have Neek at five. I think this was kind of how I felt about Dylan Jones last year.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain extent, how incredibly productive he is, and with like how, I mean, I think Neek is better than Dylan Jones is. Let me just make that clear. But just considering how well-rounded Neek has been this year, like, he's averaged 29-5 in conference play.
Yeah, that's incredible.
With a steal and a half, with a half a block, like, he didn't win player of the year. That actually came out today. Donovan did. And like,
of course,
rightfully so. New Mexico had a great season. Colorado State finished right behind them, despite losing Isaiah Stevens. They were projected to finish outside of the top six, and they finished second. I still don't think they're going to make the tournament unless they win it, just because of they don't have like many great non-conference wins, Colorado State. But Neek is someone who, like, he took that role as kind of like your lead. He took the role as being a lead guy and was still remarkably efficient. Like, he shot over 40% from three in conference play on like pretty steady volume.
Right.
He shot, you know, 50% from the floor, 78% from the free throw line. Like, I think he got better this year as a rebounder, as a defender, to some extent as a shot creator. And
his defensive box plus minus is actually kind of crazy. It's a 3.6.
He was consistently guarding either of the team's two best options, especially if they were wing players.
Right.
And he would take that assignment every night while having that much of an offensive burden on his shoulders. And like, I understand if you want to put Ian Jackson above him or whomever above him because of the draft age. Like, I think he's a very high floor player. And I think in the right context, he can have a relative ceiling.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, exceptionally high. It's not higher than someone like Ian Jackson probably.
Right.
But I just think that the overall floor, the overall base production for someone who, again, had to take on the burden of being a lead creator, and he impacted winning every single night in many different ways, and he was willing to do whatever it took.
Yeah, that's not a small thing.
Yeah, like I give him that. Again, it's not a marginal gap, or it's not a big gap either way. It's pretty marginal. But I do have him above Ian Jackson. I have Ian Jackson six. So like
it's not that far off.
No, it goes Cam Jones, Neek Clifford, Ian Jackson again. Like,
who do you have after Ian Jackson?
We'll get to that.
I know you want to put Will Riley up there. I know you do.
I don't have Will Riley on my list.
You love Will Riley, dude.
Love him to death. But yeah, I give Neek, like, again, the slight edge just based on his overall productivity.
Right.
Even though he is going to be 23 years old on draft night, and that does for sure limit his ceiling. But I think he could be someone who steps in day one and becomes a very impactful player in the right place.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense.
In a secondary role. I'm not expecting him to be like the lead guy or anything in the NBA.
No, but I mean, if he's leading your franchise, you're in some trouble.
Yeah, right. If he's like the second or third fiddle on a very good team in his NBA career, perfect.
Yeah, that's a success. Yep. So after that, who would you have? Who do you got?
I got Miles Bird.
Wow, over Drake Powell.
I get Drake. I don't have Drake on my list. I don't have he or Will Riley on my list just because I think they're going back to school. But that's that's more so a projection than an actual, like, I know that for a fact.
Right. But so you think Powell's going back to school? Because I think his ability defensively has raised his stock. In my eyes, I think NBA evaluators are going to look at that size, the arm length, the defensive ability, and I think somebody's going to want to take a swing at him in the first round.
Perhaps.
But I could see that. I like Miles Bird. I mean, I haven't watched him nearly as much as you. 6'7", 190 pounds. It's only 20. I thought he was older, but he's only 20. Give me some Miles Bird info.
It's been disheartening. Like the first time we talked about him versus now, it's disheartening how much his 3-point percentage has dropped off.
Right.
It's a little funky, and that's something that he's going to need to work on because it is like a weird form. So that's something that's going to have to be reworked, but I think I have him. He was a redshirt sophomore. Mm-hmm. The best part about him, the thing that I love about him is his defensive playmaking. Like he's always in the passing lanes. He's always blocking shots for like, he's an exceptional shot blocker for someone who's, you know, 6'5", 6'6". He's got, you know, good arm length. Like I want to say he clocks in around like a near 7-foot wingspan.
And his box plus his defensive box plus minus is a 5.8.
Yeah, it's like unreal. He was a remarkably productive player defensively on a top 20, top 30 defense in the country.
So
and
when we compare, I think there's more
playmaking chops there too. Like when he's able to get downhill, like he's very athletic. When he's able to get downhill, he, I think, makes the right decision more often than not. Sometimes it comes a little bit late, but like he'll still make the right reads and the right, he doesn't have bad passing ability. Like it's solid. It's not great, but it's solid.
Yeah.
It's just that there just isn't much space in San Diego State's offense for him to take advantage of that enough, right, or as much as you would like him to. He may be someone who could raise a stock in the tournament if they make the tournament, because San Diego State is currently a team that's on the bubble.
Right.
Outside
looking in.
I don't want to say outside looking in, but they're a team that we're like, if they lose a game, if they lose tomorrow or no, it'd be Thursday. If they lose Thursday to Boise State, they could be in a situation where like, if there's another bid stealer somewhere else or another team on the bubble plays well or something like that, they could be knocked out. Like,
let me ask you a question about Miles Bird.
Okay.
Last year's draft, we didn't have any franchise players really outside of Steph Castle, like on our boards. Defensively, though, we had some dogs, right? Yeah, like Ryan Dunn, Carter. Obviously, Castle's a dog defensively.
Mm-hmm.
How does Bird compare to any of them defensively? Not offensively, but defensively.
He's still a tier below.
Okay.
And I think a lot of that, I think he's worse on ball than those guys.
So if he's worse on ball than those guys, he can't really shoot the three ball, doesn't facilitate a lot. It's going to be a very difficult path for him to be successful in the NBA.
I think that some of the on-ball defense will come hand in hand with him getting stronger, because he's 6'7", but 175.
Right. It's an unbelievably light for that like size.
That's skinny. So I don't think it's a super tough path, because I think he has the motor to do it.
Right.
And I just think there's some mechanical adjustments that he has to make with his jump shot. And I think he'll be better in a more pace and spaced NBA. But like,
So like when I compare him to Jalen Bridges in my mind, Jalen Bridges is like 6'8", but he was a consistent 40% 3-point shooter. And I think he's just as good defensively as Miles Bird.
I don't know if he's just as good defensively.
Okay, so say it's slightly less. No?
Maybe.
I think
the thing that would separate the two is the shot blocking.
Probably the shot blocking. I don't know, man. Hold on.
And, I mean, Jalen, I mean, the thing that gives me some hope, it's probably false hope, depending on who you are, is the free throw shooting.
Right.
He's been 83, 84% each of the last 2 years. This year on more volume, I think, than last.
I'll give you the shot blocking because it is elite, man. Two and a half block shots a game, right? For Miles Bird?
Yeah. And he's more athletic than Jalen Willis.
He is. Jalen's definitely not that athletic. That is true. So I guess the question I have then for you, Jalen Bridges, 6'8", similar builds, very long wingspan, good defender, not great, way better at shooting the ball, 40% from three for his career, way better. Not as good as an athlete. Is that enough for you to put him to where he gets drafted where Bridges did not?
To me right now, he's like a mid-second.
Okay.
In my head.
Okay. Who do you have after Miles Bird on your list?
I have like a lump of players together.
Mm-hmm.
We can probably make this quick because I'm sure there might be guys on your list that aren't on mine. Chaz Lanier, Kobe Bray, and KJ Lewis.
Wow, you put Kobe Bray and you put interesting. That's interesting.
I mean, there's very much the possibility I'm probably leaving a name or two out.
You left Drake Powell out. Like, we talked about that because you think he's going back to school.
Same thing with Will Riley, but again, like,
Will Riley needs to go back to school.
That's more so, again, that's more so a projection,
right?
Than anything. But those are the three guys that I have.
Let me clarify for the people, the audience, the Will Riley stuff. Will Riley is 6'8", 195-pound freshman from Illinois. Early in the season, he was invisible. I mean, you never noticed him on the floor. Lately, he's been doing some better things. Like, he had a 22-point game in their win against Purdue. You know, that was a good game for him. You know, 50% from the field, 50% from three. Made all his free throws. But that's the anomaly. That's not the norm for Will Riley. He just typically hasn't shown up. He's so skinny, dude, and not strong at all. It's unbelievable how skinny this kid is. He does average 4 rebounds per game, 2 assists per game. Doesn't turn it over, but he also doesn't facilitate or playmake that much. His shooting from the field has been abysmal. His shooting from three has been abysmal. So, even with all that good stuff later in the season, he's only shooting 32% from three. His defensive box plus minus is a 1.7, which is terrible. So he really needs to go back to school. I'm not sold on him as a prospect in this draft to come out. The other guy, Drake Powell, his offense really isn't his thing, as we talked about. But his defense... No. His defense has been fantastic. Now, on low volume, his offense has gotten better. Like, he ended up shooting 39% from three on the season and, you know, 49% from the field. Doesn't facilitate at all. He'll rebound a little bit, like 3 rebounds per game. But he just can't create on his own, and he doesn't really navigate the half-court offense very well. To the point of box plus minus is his offensive box plus minus is like a 3.1, which isn't good. So that's why you're saying, you know, he's probably going to go back to school.
Yeah.
Now, as far as my list goes, when we're looking at just pure shooting guards, there's not really a lot of guys I'd have on this list because most of them are like hybrid, like point guard type guys, like the international guys. You know what I mean? Like there's Sergio De La Ria. I watched a little bit of his game. I'm not sold on him as a prospect. He's 6'6", but he's more of like a ball handling and, you know, facilitator type of guy in Europe. But he's really, I mean, not that creative. Like Jaeger Denman, he's more of a point, but he doesn't do any of that very well. So I'm not high on him either. So as far as my list goes, I would have Drake Powell, like we talked about. Chaz Lanier would probably be after that. I'm not sold on KJ Lewis.
He was almost another one of like the Will Riley and Drake Powell. Like he may need to go back to school, but
he's probably going to have to, because you can't shoot 16% from three and expect to get drafted anywhere other than the second round.
Is that good?
16% from three? Ask the question again.
Is that good?
No. No.
I was hoping you would use your soundboard if you had it up.
Oh no!
No button.
I don't have it. I wish I had a no on there, but I don't.
Okay.
I have insults. I can hurl some insults at you.
You are a smelly pirate hooker.
We can do that.
Okay. That. Whenever KJ Lewis shoots a three, that might be some people's reaction.
That's somebody's reaction. That's right, man. Yeah, that's a terrible percentage.
And last year he was what, 38%? I mean, I think on lower volume.
Lower volume.
It's not like he's always
wasn't great though.
16% 3-point shooter. It's fallen off a cliff this year.
So let me go into Chaz Lanier a little bit. Chaz Lanier is 6'5", 207, but he's 23 years old draft night, right?
Yep.
He doesn't turn the ball over at Tennessee, but he shoots the freaking lights out, dude. 40% from three, 75% from the free throw line, long arms. You'd think he'd be a better defender. I mean, he's a decent defender. He's not a negative defender.
Yeah.
And he'll rebound for you about four a game. So the fact that he could just kind of fit in, hit the three ball, has enough positional size, you know, that he won't be a liability for your team. That's why I'd say Chaz Lanier. Let me ask you this. Do you classify Darian Williams as a shooting guard or a wing? Small forward.
Wing.
Yeah, that's what I classified him as well.
He's more of like a three. Like if I hypothetically put him on this list, he would probably be lumped with those last few guys somewhere. I'd actually have him number one over VJ. No. Yeah, he'd be somewhere in that very last tier, but I classify him more as a wing and not.
So that's my 10 then. Because I have Powell on there and you don't, and I have Richardson. Those are my 10. Because I don't think Bray gets drafted.
I'm not sure any of these last three guys get drafted, if I'm being completely
honest. Who were your last three again?
Chaz, Kobe, and KJ.
I think Chaz could get drafted. I do. I think he could be at the bottom of that first round. Bottom of that second round. I think somebody takes a swing on him because of his shooting and his positional size. But then
I think same thing with Kobe, though. No? Like, he led the country in three-point shooting last year.
The reason why I lean away from Kobe is because, one, I don't think he's very physical at all. And I think Chaz is way more physical defensively.
It's true.
So he's going to be able to hold up at the point of attack. Even though Kobe's bigger, he's just not a very good defender at all. I mean,
no,
at all. He just screams undrafted to me, Kobe. He's like, you could see him in Sioux Falls for the Miami Heat.
I could see any of these three guys in Sioux Falls.
That's true.
If I'm being real with you, I could see Miles Bird in Sioux Falls. Like, I don't like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not.
But I'll say this. The one thing about Chaz Lanier and Brea and, you know, guys like that, teams value 3-point shooting. Like, it's a commodity in today's style of play that'll get you on the floor. And if you can just fit in with the group, go with the flow, not have a big ego, play defense, I think that will go a long way. So you're probably right. It's Chaz is on the bubble. Kobe's on the bubble. I think Kobe, somebody could see that 3-point shooting in size and be like, yeah, I'll take him in the second round. It's possible.
Yeah, it'd be like if you're like pick like 52.
Right. Right. Pick 52. And I don't think Hunter Silas has any shot of being drafted at this point. Like, people were really high on him last year and I didn't see it. And I still don't see it. Like, at all. Same thing with Jameer Watkins. Don't see it. Like, Hunter Silas, you talk about a guy whose 3-point shooting fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
Shooting 28% from three this season.
Someone else who I thought about mentioning on here was Jackson Robinson.
I have not watched him at all. At all.
He's like, to me, he's a very good shot maker, and like, he's creative in that way. He played at BYU last year under Mark Pope. I think he was one of the only guys that is playing for him again this year. I don't think there were any other BYU transfers.
Actually, hold on real quick. I did watch Kentucky games. I was isolating Owe.
Yeah.
I didn't notice him. So
the flashes have been inconsistent.
Yeah.
He's someone else who I think will be, he's also going to be like, I think 22 on draft night, 23. Like, he's another older prospect. He was someone who lit up the tournament last year though, for BYU. I don't remember who they faced, but he was awesome in their one game.
There's some really skinny, tall shooting guards in this draft. He's 6'6", 189 pounds.
Yeah, doesn't look very strong either. But he's someone who...
Long wingspan, though. 6'11 wingspan, according to Tankathon.
I want to say he came out... He tested the waters last year, and so that's probably where they got that measurement from. I think I could be wrong, though. But, like, he's someone who... For them specifically, like, he shoots a lot of threes. He can, you know, be like a tertiary playmaker if you want him to be. He's okay defensively. Nothing that you're going to scream about.
His box plus minus is terrible defensively. Terrible. It's like a one.
But he's someone else who I thought about putting on this list, but I didn't.
I gotcha. Well, I mean, it's not a... You know what this proved to me, this little exercise of doing this list? The shooting guard class is actually not that deep. It isn't.
It's top heavy.
It's very top heavy. Very top heavy, the shooting guard class. You know what? That's interesting. That's an interesting pod topic we can do. Once we get through, what is it, the wings? That's all we have left are wings. Once we do the wings, which are small forwards... we can go through and be like, how deep is XYZ position group? And just talk about which position groups are the deepest in this draft.
I mean, if I were to give my very, like, initial analysis, I would probably say the bigs are the deepest.
Point guards are pretty deep too, though. Point guards are pretty deep also.
Even though we're not high on most of these guys, or as high as the consensus on some of them.
Yeah. Sure. Did you freeze? What'd you say? Oh, you said
no,
sure.
No, I'm just saying, like, I know we're not as high on some of the point guards as the consensus.
Right. No, for sure.
Sure. Like, that's... Point guard is another, like, deep one.
Because I think as you go down the list and you start getting into that second round... I don't want to do this on air because we're ruining a future episode. But there's guys that are going to be in that second round that are going to be contributors and be able to, you know, make teams better from that point guard list. But so we'll talk about that at a later date. But that's all I got for today, Matt. Tell the people where they can find you, follow, and get more of your work.
You can find me at NPH_824_ on Twitter. You can find me hotonhoops.com, MountainWestConnection.com. VendettaSportsMedia.com, as well as playback.tv/5RSN and playback.tv/hoopsprofile. where we're at right now.
Absolutely. And we do this every Tuesdays and Thursdays. We do live broadcast. We're doing them from our playback room on playback.tv/hoopsprofile. Find this content on YouTube. So if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. You can listen to the podcast while you're traveling, working out, anywhere podcasts are found, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of those places you listen to podcasts. I'm Digital Adele. You can find me under that moniker, any social media place. That's all I got for now. I'll see you guys next time.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.